You're listening to the Stone Tapes on Siren 107.3 FM with Sam Stone and friends.
I always say what I'm feeling. I was born without a zip on my mouth. Sometimes I don't even mean it. It takes a little while to figure me out. I like my coffee with two sugars in it. High heels and my jewelry dripping. Drinking, I get all fired up. Hey, hey, hey. Insecure, but I'm working with it. Many things that I could get rid of. Ain't nobody give it up. I made a few mistakes, I regret it nightly. I broke a couple hearts that I wear on my sleeve. My mama always said, girl, you're troubling. And now I wonder, could you fall for a woman like me? And every time we talk, in my mouth, you got them blue jeans with a rib up in my head with your fingers in it. Love it when you turn me on. Young Sam with a little bit of love drunk in the middle where they get down to our favorite song. I made a few mistakes, I regret it nightly. I broke a couple hearts that I wear on my sleeve. My mama always said, girl, you're troubling. And now I wonder, could you fall for a woman like me? And every time we talk,
woman like me. Soon as I brush up on them, I can tell he like me. You know all them on them, my trifle swipe me. Now that he could afford to ice me. Tell him that's a batch for me, bitch, in your area. But the more bad, then the more merrier. Baddies to my left and to the right, a little scarier. Dude, boy, tell me, can you handle all this dairy? A million, I'm getting my billion. Greatest of all time, cause I'm a chameleon. I switch it up for every era, I'm really bomb. These people really wanna be Nicki, I'm really mom. Apple cut the check, I want all this money. Seven up, go grip the tech, and leave all this bloody. It's the queen and little mix, skated on, I'm sorry. My daddy is Indian, all this curry.
Woman like me, like a woman like me. La la la, woman like me. Made a few mistakes, I regret it nightly. I broke a couple hearts that I wear on my sleeve. My mama always said, girl, you're troubling. And now I wonder, could you fall for a woman like me? And every time we touch, boy, you make me feel weak. I can tell you're shy and I think you're so sweet. Spending every night undercover and still I wonder, could you fall for a woman like me? For a woman like me.
I think we all know what the title of that was.
It's A Woman Like You.
Well, not exactly like you. But there was quite a lot of lovely women, sort of Little Mix in there, and of course featuring Nicki Minaj.
Yes.
I did say that right.
You did. And it's all about you and money, apparently.
It's about money.
About money.
Yes.
Who knew?
Hello, I'm Sam Stone. Welcome to the 44th edition of the Stone Tapes.
44?
I know.
Goodness,
I can't get over
me.
It. Joining us this month, we have George Mann.
Hello.
We have Patricia H. Ash.
Hello.
Hello, Patricia.
That was loud.
Later on, we will have Robin Pierce. And, of course, we have David J. Howe. And, of course, our producer, Alex Lefchuk.
Yeah, I'm barely here. I am. So thank goodness for that.
And welcome to the show again, Patricia. How's things over in the lovely United States at the moment? not quite in as much turmoil as we are over here.
Yeah, but we're not far off. Over there in sunny Texas.
The government is still Oh, it's raining, actually. It's raining.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go. And we saw you've got a new little kitty.
Oh, yes, she's a foster kitten. I got her, that picture's from the day before yesterday. I'd just gotten her, and the first thing she did was climb on my shoulder.
Oh, that's so sweet. Oh,
so
if
sweet.
You're in Austin, Texas, and you want a kitten, I highly recommend her.
Oh, she sounds adorable. How old is she?
I'm not 100% certain. I mean, shelter cats, their birthdays are pretty much all best guesses.
Yes.
Probably about 3 months old.
Oh, bless. So tiny. It's a little baby.
Little kitty.
Oh. Yes. So what are you going to review for us today, Patricia?
I'm going to review for you a new a book series. It's probably not new. There are 5 books out in it, but it was new to me. And I read all 5 within about a month.
Wow.
Right. So what's it called, this series?
The series is called The Beginner's Guide to Necromancy. It's by Haley Edwards. It's an urban fantasy thing. I really enjoyed it.
What's the basic premise of the... I mean, obviously, you had me at necromancy, because that's just something...
I know. It's a really interesting take on necromancers. In this world, you can, like, hire them, and they'll make you immortal. It's pretty cool. Of course, they do that by turning you into a vampire. The whole thing.
They have to kill you first, yeah. We can make you immortal.
Well, you know, if you're going to raise the dead, they do have to be dead.
That's true.
Yeah.
My print in the contract.
But is the price too high?
Yeah. It depends. How much money do you have? It's a good series. It's a really cool take on necromancy. And the first one is called How to Save an Undead Life. The main character is called Greer Woolworth, and she's got a house that's alive. She's inherited that from her adopted guardian mother.
The house is alive. In what way is the house alive?
Oh, yes. Oh, it's a haunted house, but the ghost has, like, merged with the house, so it's like her friend, and it will, like, turn on her shower for her, and it'll keep out bad guys.
Well, right. Sounds so, like the ultimate security.
Yeah.
And
really say, it's not,
I know.
It's not called Alexa, is it?
No, it's called Woolworth House, because the Woolworths is the family. All the necromancers have, like, big noble family type things, and it's this whole thing. It's really interesting. And so she spent some time in definitely not Azkaban, because that's a different book, and due to intellectual property laws, we can't have that, but basically Azkaban. And then she got let out, and she's not really sure why, and she was framed for the murder of her guardian. It's the whole thing. Read the books. It gets really interesting, and there's a lot of cool plot twists that I didn't see coming, like, oh no, this guy who we thought was really great and was going to be the big love interest, no, he's evil. And this other guy that we thought was going to be the love interest, no, he's not. Not him either.
I kind of like that, actually, that it throws you those kind of
twisted Tony books are always better than straightforward ones.
Definitely.
Yes.
And what would you give it out of 10?
These are all pretty twisty. I would give it 9 out of 10. I mean, I read them all pretty quickly and really enjoyed them, but I don't know if I'm going to go back and read them again. Maybe I will. I really like them.
So is that a 9 out of 10?
So maybe 9.5 out of 10.
For all of them?
Wow. So there wasn't any diminishing in the series at all in what you thought was... That's great. That's really good.
Yeah, because usually it's like, oh, the first one was great, and the second one was okay, I guess.
Yeah.
But this one, the first one was great. The second one was really good. The third one was also very good. Oh. And it just keeps going. So I'm really, really happy about this series.
No, it sounds amazing. Anyway, I think that's definitely on my look-up list for sure.
Oh, yeah.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, the first one was How to Save...
Keep talking.
Oh, Okay. Not a Great Time Dead Live. The author was Haley Edwards.
Fantastic.
Left to say, these prayers aren't working anymore. Every word shut down in flames. What's left to do with these broken pieces on the floor? I'm losing my voice. Shaking, I've been bending backwards till I'm broke. Watching all these dreams go up in smoke. Let beauty come out of ashes. Let beauty come out of ashes.
Celine Dion, and featured in Deadpool 2.
Apparently.
Apparently so. Everybody's going, I don't remember
it. We don't remember
that. So, welcome Robin. I believe you joined us. Hi.
Hi, Robin.
How are you today?
Very well, thank you. How are you three?
We're good.
We're good down here in rainy Lincoln. And it's raining in Texas, apparently. Is it raining in Wales?
It's not exactly sunny in Wales, mate.
There you go.
Oh, it sounds like almost a worldwide.
Yeah, the sky is obviously crying for some reason.
We're glad you've joined us.
Just in time.
Early, Robin, because we're going to go over to George at this moment in time. We're going to talk about something that we're sure you'll know about as well. So, could you explain to us, George?
Yeah, we thought we'd do a little bit about comics today, didn't we? And
I've heard of those.
We thought you might have. And I thought, given I've recently been to the cinema to watch Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, I'd do a bit of a recap about recent Spider-Man comics, and in particular, the character that is introduced in that film to a wider audience of people who might only have a casual understanding of Spider-Man, which is Miles Morales, young black Latino Spider-Man. He wears a black and red costume.
Wow.
Have you seen the movie, Robin?
I have indeed, yes.
And what do you think?
I liked it. It was almost as if you were watching, or reading a Spider-Man comic that basically was inked in LSD.
yeah. It was a bit psychedelic. I personally loved it, and I thought it was a great story for capturing the essence of Spider-Man. And it's based on a series of comics called The Spider-Verse. You know how Marvel and DC tend to have these big events?
Yes.
You know, Crisis and Infinite Earths and things like that. They did one called Spider-Verse.
Wow.
And it was looking at Spider-Men from different realities, different kind of alternate universes and timelines,
right.
Which
now
is where
is
all these other characters
me, yeah.
come in.
Mm-hmm.
And a crisis that was affecting all of the spider people. So in the story, they come together and you see all these different versions of Spider-Man, like Spider-Ham, which is the little pig one that you see in the film, Captain Britain Spider-Man, Spider-Gwen, and kind of loads and loads
of others. So Spider-Gwen's a girl, ain't she?
Spider-Gwen's a girl. Yep. Gwen Stacy's one of the female characters from Spider-Man's history. And in this particular timeline, she gets bitten by the spider and she becomes Spider-Gwen.
It's a bitey spider, this.
Yeah,
there's
no matter which reality you look at, there's a Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting about Miles Morales is he was introduced in kind of late 90s, I think it was. In the 90s, Marvel had decided they wanted to do something to try and capture new readers because a lot of these characters had been around for a long time. They had mm-hmm. big, long runs of comics. And they thought, fresh introduction, new number ones, let's do Ultimate Spider-Man and Ultimate Avengers. And they had created this Ultimate Universe, which is a new timeline of stories set in the modern day. And at first it was Peter Parker in the Spider-Man comic, and his story ran much as it had in the original comics, up until the point where it diverged and he died. And Miles Morales takes up the mantle, and he was introduced by Brian Michael Bendis and went on to have a run of kind of about 240 comics, I think it is, of Miles Morales. And what's great about it is in the kind of the main Spider-Man comics, Peter Parker's aged, he's married. He runs a company. He's a bit more global. And in some ways, he's lost a bit of that thing that made him Spider-Man. Because to me, and I think Spider-Man has always been kind of an adolescent story. It's about a kid at high school struggling to do his homework and be a superhero and, deal with girls and bullies and all of that. A coming-of-age story. And what Miles Morales did was go back to those core roots. What we've seen, actually, is that those stories... It's now actually the Miles Morales stories have been the most consistently written by one writer Spider-Man run ever. Mm. So Bendis wrote all of the issues, and he's recently stopped. But those, I know. they've taken him off to DC instead. But actually, the new Tom Holland movie has been very influenced by the Miles Morales run, as much as it has the main kind of Peter Parker stories.
So is this Tom Holland of Fright Night? Fame.
No, it's a different
Tom Holland.
Different Tom Holland.
Right, okay, interesting.
So for anyone who's seen Into the Spider-Verse and is interested, don't get put off by the fact that these 240 comics, because what Marvel did in about 2015, 2016 is they decided, we've had enough of having these multiple universes, we're going to crash them all together. And they destroyed the Ultimate Universe and just kept the good bits, basically, including Miles Morales.
Yeah.
So Miles Morales came into the main Marvel Universe, meets Peter Parker, gets kind of endorsed by Peter Parker to be another Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And in 2016, they started from number one again, and they did a run of about 30 issues, which brings you up to date.
Mm.
And they're great. They're a great jumping on point for anyone who wants kind of those great core Spider-Man stories.
Fantastic.
Spider-Man at high school. And they come very highly recommended. So I've just gone back and reread those comics, having watched the film, and I'm now sharing them with Emily, who was on the show last time.
Emily was a little star. She's
been reading on my app on the iPad Spider-Gwen comics and Miles Morales Spider-Man comics.
Very cool.
They're perfect for that age as well.
So what would you sort of rate these then? You're quite enthusiastic about them.
I'm very enthusiastic, actually. Yeah, I mean, I hadn't thought about a rating, but I'd probably say for that run of recent kind of 30 comics, I'd probably give them a 9 out of 10, actually. I think they... For me, they really speak to the Spider-Man fan in me.
So how does the film sort of tie into the comics then? Does it take part of the story and sort of present it as the film?
Yeah, so the animated movie.
Yeah, the recent one.
So it's a version of that Spider-Verse event story. So
right.
It's not quite as complicated as the comics, because the comics was You know, it's a bigger span of story. And that had more alternative versions of Spider-Man in it, whereas this one kind of has a much narrower...
It focuses on this one character.
Yeah, Miles Morales is your core character, but there's an older Peter Parker as well, and Spider-Gwen. They're the core three, and then there's a couple of others who make an appearance. But yeah, it's about kind of a threat to the multiverse.
So why... I may not even know the answer to this. Why did they do it as like animated rather than as a live action, like obviously all of the other Spider-Man films?
I think it's because they wanted to keep them separate, because the live action movies, the Tom Holland movies, Spider-Man Homecoming and Far From Home, are part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So they tie into the Avengers movies. They're part of that core continuity of Marvel films. And Sony actually own the Spider-Man rights, because years and years ago, when Marvel were about to go bankrupt, they started selling their rights off. So they did a deal with Sony to let them use Spider-Man again in the Marvel movies. But Sony have got these rights to go on and exploit other Spider-Man properties. So they've decided to do it in a way that doesn't tie into the Marvel universe. So the Venom movie that came out last year is a Sony movie. It's not part of the Marvel universe. And then this is an animated movie that's keeping it very separate.
Yeah,
and
I
believe they are going to do a sequel.
It does reference the Spider-Man movies, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the way you could look at it is the Spider-Man movies could be another version of Spider-Man from within that Spider-Verse.
And there's
lots of references in there. And it's got the theme tune and all of that, the classic Spider-Man song.
Spider-Man does have Spider-Can. Spider Pig.
I really must catch up on Spider-Man. I haven't seen any of the new reboot of the films anyway, so I need
to sort of
see those.
Spider-Man Homecoming is a brilliant movie.
I think it was Tobey Maguire the last lot that I saw.
A Long Way From Home looks really, really good.
It does.
The trailer dropped today.
Yeah, and Jake Gyllenhaal as Mysterio as well. And, you know, he'll be marvellous in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really recommend the Spider-Man Homecoming. It's a great movie. And this new Into the Spider-Verse. Bearing in mind what Robin said about being a bit psychedelic.
Speaking of Robin.
Hello, Robin.
Hello.
So, what are you going to review for us today, please?
Well,
thank you, George.
Taken that was
a bit into the Spider-Verse.
Away from the cinema this time.
Right.
I was going to review Glass until I realised it's not even out until next week. So, I
next month then.
One of the streaming services, in particular Netflix, even though others are available.
Absolutely.
But they didn't produce Bird Box, did they? So there we go. Previously, I've been a little bit dismissive of films that were made, produced by the streaming services. I saw Bright a couple of years ago, that fairy story cop action movie with Will Smith, and I didn't like it.
Yeah.
So when I started hearing about this thing called Bird Box, I thought, oh, Sandra Bullock. Bird Box. it's a chick flick. There may be a pun there. I don't know.
Yeah.
Something that...
But when it started popping up on my social media that it was a horror movie, I thought, give it a watch. Can't do any harm. So I watched it, and it pretty much blew my socks off. I was sitting there watching a Sandra Bullock movie with my socks the other side of the room.
So here's a controversial thing. I'm going to ask you a question. Isn't it just A Quiet Place with blindfolds?
Aha! You have actually... Are you looking over my shoulder?
Sorry, Robin.
Look at his notes.
I haven't seen either of them, so...
That's right. That's what I'd heard. Yes.
It's like a mix of A Quiet Place with blindfolds and the last good movie that M. Night Shyamalan made, in my opinion, called The Happening. You guys seen The Happening?
No.
I
think I'm
the
only person on the planet who likes that.
Yeah, or have seen it.
I'll have to look it up. I might have seen it. It sounds familiar.
That's the one where something happens.
Mark Wahlberg.
Everybody starts dying, suicides,
and they're running away from something.
It is. Yeah.
There may be an airborne virus that we don't know what it is, but they're actually trying to outrun the wind.
I've seen it.
It's absolutely fantastic.
I liked it.
But Oh, You and Me, Sam, we're the only people on the planet who like that film.
I did like it. I remember watching that.
Yes.
And, of course, Bird Box is a lot like that because it opens up with mass suicides. They're gory, they're shocking, and they're quite jarring.
It's like the people want to kill themselves in the most horrible way that they can possibly kill themselves.
Absolutely. It's as if they see something which we don't
see.
And it drives them absolutely insane. And it's not only that they want to, you know, end their own existence, but whatever they've seen is so terrible, they want to punish themselves and go out as painfully as they possibly can. And that alone is disturbing. So there goes most of the world's population right there. Whatever's driving these people mad and suicidal is something that they see. Even if you see it on camera, if you see it, you're driven to this.
And it can be seen on camera and TV transfers.
Yes, it can, because one of the characters sees it on CCTV.
That's right. So there's this thought that, you know, maybe we could see where we're going by using cameras or looking indirectly. Like the old Gorgon thing, you know. That doesn't work.
You know, were they trying to look at it at a mirror or whatever?
It would still do it.
There is a safe haven, a sanctuary. And Sandra Bullock's character and a couple of children need to make their way there. But they've got to go down this river. There are rapids. And, of course, for their own safekeeping, they have to be blindfolded most of the time.
They can't.
And it's a harrowing movie to watch. Edge of your seat stuff. But, of course, it's had a byproduct of people on YouTube doing the Bird Box challenge and trying to cross roads while blindfolded. And
how
also
stupid.
Driving cars blindfolded.
Stupid.
Now, I thought that baby shark thing in the summer drove me absolutely mental.
That was insane, wasn't it? Rubbish.
But
it's like a load of rubbish.
Nowadays, you've got people driving blindfolded and being filmed doing it. I mean, you know, Do they have to be told that this is a bad idea? Do they have to be told that this is why blind people don't drive? You know?
To be perfectly honest with you, Robin, that was the one element of the film that I really didn't think worked. I absolutely agree with you. It's edge of the seat stuff. It's a thrilling film. But you really have to place any kind of cognitive function at the to one side. I mean, there's a sequence in the film where this group decides to go and visit the local supermarket because they ran out of food and drink, and they need to get some food and drink. So you can't go outside. I mean, again, for some completely unexplained reason, these invisible monsters can't go inside. They're only outside. So if you're inside, you're safe, and you black out all the windows and stuff, and then you can't see them. But the things can't come inside.
Yeah, they don't seem to go in.
So that's
a
bit weird.
Yeah, they can't come inside. But
that's a bit weird.
You know, if we accept it with vampires, we can accept it.
So the guys get in a car, they black all the windows out, and then they use a sat-nav to navigate their way, like, from a road, down three roads, round a corner, and then into a supermarket car park and up to the supermarket doors, using nothing but a sat-nav, when the entire road is full of crashed cars and people and rubbish.
Yeah, that would only work on a clear road, I suppose.
All over everywhere.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then they come back and somehow managed to get the car into their own garage, which I thought was utterly brilliant. Who is this driver? Is he the Stig? I mean, he's the only person who could possibly do that. We're completely
blindfolded. I think you do have to suspend your disbelief at that point, to be fair.
The same with the whole thing on the boat in the rapids. You cannot navigate a boat. I mean, you don't know where you are. You have to be able to see.
Well, the current's only going one way, though, isn't it?
Of course it is,
so it's just going to take them downstream.
Oh, but no, but the boat, you don't know which
That's
way
like
the boat's
thing,
facing, you don't know which way you're rowing.
With the car.
Oh, no, it was. I just thought it was all a bit daft from that perspective, to be perfectly honest.
Not going to be giving it a high mark, then.
but I have to say, I enjoyed the film a lot. I thought that the tension was well directed. I thought the tension was racked up nicely. I really liked it when, I don't know if it'll be giving away too much, when some of the populace don't kill themselves when they see these creatures, but kind of are moved to force other people to see them.
These people are from an insane asylum, though, to begin with.
And yeah, they are escaped lunatics. Yeah.
And it's all a bit, it all gets a bit fraught. It's a great film. It really is a great film. But you combine that with kids who will not do as they are told. Stay in the bunk.
When do they ever?
Stay in the... Don't take your blindfold off.
When do kids ever do as they're told anyway?
You know, exactly. you know where this is going, don't you? You know. And yeah.
Do you ever see the creatures?
No. You see drawings of them.
Right.
Somebody who
they
can
did make
see
a mock-up of one of the creatures, but it basically looked like a green man with a horrible baby
That's
face.
That's right. There was drawings.
Yeah, there was drawings.
Yeah, that
you never
I think
actually get to see them.
One of the lunatics had done.
I think that's one of the film's great, great strengths, is that you do not see them.
Right.
Absolutely.
Because
it's best unseen.
It's better unseen, yeah.
Well, we're getting to that point where we need some more music, but I'd like to know quickly what your mark was out of 10, please, Robin.
Eight.
David?
See, I'd probably go for more of a 70.
Yeah, so I'd probably go for an 8.5, 9.
Actually, really liked
I liked it that much, yeah. Yep.
Sandra Bullock was okay.
She was very good in it.
She looked exactly the same as she did in Demolition Man, which was about 300 years ago. So I don't know what she's taking, but...
Well, stay with us, Robin, and we'll be back after this.
Tell me something, girl. Are you happy in this modern world? Or do you need more? Is there something else you're searching for? I'll fall in all the good times I find myself longing for change, and in the bad times I fear myself. Tell me something, boy. Aren't you tired trying to fill that void? Or do you need more? Ain't it hard keeping it so hardcore? I'm falling in all the good times I find myself longing for change, and in the bad times I fear myself.
In the shallow, shallow, la, 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 low. Herring.
Hi, this is Mark Kermode.
Hi, I'm James Martin.
Hello, this is John Craven, and glad you're listening to Siren.
Siren FM.
Siren FM.
You're listening to Siren 107.3 FM.
I'm Dave Myers.
And I'm Cy King.
And we're the Hairy Bikers.
On Siren FM.
Bing bong.
You're listening to The Stone Tapes with Sam Stone, David J. Howe, Patricia H. Ash, George Mann and Robin Pierce. A show which sheds a little slice of geek sunshine into the ether.
In dreams he came.
And obviously that was Shallow with Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga.
I thought he was great,
gorgeous,
Doctor Who.
Gorgeous song.
He was ever so good. Bradley Cooper.
I think that was a different Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Walsh, maybe. Bradley Walsh.
Confusing me. It's too late in the day. But obviously, we've just quickly, briefly talking about that the fact that this has come from one of the songs from A Star Is Born, and I really want to see this film. And George was saying he's seen it. I know you've seen it, haven't you, Robin?
Nope.
You haven't seen A Star Is Born? Why did
no,
I think you had?
The last no. one I saw had Kris Kristofferson and Barbara Streisand in it.
Ah, right. Well,
but I haven't seen this. I'm not a big fan of Lady Gaga.
You know what? Neither am I. And I didn't think. I went to the cinema. I was by myself. I was in San Francisco, and I was by myself. And I thought, I've got to do something. And I'd wandered the streets for a while, and had a drink. And I thought, I'm just going to go to the cinema. And that was the only film that was playing. And I thought, I'll just sit and watch it. And it was amazing. It was a 10 out of 10 movie.
Wow.
Really? I mean, it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Musicals seem to be having some kind of resurgence. I watched The Greatest Showman over Christmas and really didn't like it at all.
I didn't fancy it. I just don't fancy it myself.
The girls in my house are obsessed with it.
I just don't fancy it.
I thought it was dire. The songs were dire. Hugh Jackman was dire. You know, get yourself back to the X-Men, lad.
Poor old Huge.
Oh, well, that actually, with you saying that musicals are making a bit of a revival, that brings me into the next segment of our show, which is Let's Talk Series. And I've been watching a series I'm absolutely addicted to, and unfortunately, it's only two seasons at the moment, and I've binged them all. So I'm quite miffed that I'm not watching any more of The Marvellous Mrs. Maisel. And this is basically set in around about 1950s, about a woman who discovers her husband's having an affair, Jewish family, very, very funny because, you know, to be honest, Jewish New Yorkers generally are very funny and they, you know, Yiddish humour is some of the most funny to me anyway. And she's a real character. She's a wonderful and really is a marvellous woman. She's good at everything. Her husband, though, wants to be a stand-up comedian and she goes and supports him at a local club. But then when he has a really bad night, gets heckled off and he bombs, basically. He gets all upset with himself and he admits that he's having this affair and he leaves her just like that. Well, she's absolutely heartbroken, obviously. She gets herself drunk, goes back to this club and goes on the stage and starts talking and she's hilarious. And there's a woman there called Susie that runs the club and she just realises that this is a star in the making. She knows this woman has got a natural ability for comedy. And that's the kickoff of the first episode. And, you know, she's funny and it gets funnier and they've got all sorts of stand-up comedy. You know, I'm not somebody who really watches comedy things. David will tell you most of the time I go, oh, don't do comedy particularly. But I absolutely laugh out loud watching this show. Maybe it's just because of my Jewish half that I get the Yiddish humour so much. But it is absolutely a spellbinding show. It's very well shot. You see the development of this character all the way through to the second season. All of the characters are interesting. This, you know, the one that takes her on as a manager and starts managing her, this Susie, she's funny too. Her parents are funny. The guy that's her father, I'll just get his name now, he used to be in Monk. I don't know if you guys saw that show years and years ago.
I remember it.
Yeah.
You might be right. Hang on, I've got it all up here. Yes, Tony Shalhoub. Well done, David.
Well, that's good.
And
yeah, well done.
Rachel Brosnahan is her name, the one who plays Miss Maisel, and she has actually won an award recently. She's won a Golden Globe for this, for her role.
That's how good she is. And her husband, her wayward husband, is called Michael Zegan. But we've got some great characters in here. Brilliant. The woman who plays the mother, Marion Hinkle. Brilliant character. Very, very good performances from her too. And, of course, Susie Myerson, the manager, is Alex Borstein, who I've not seen before, but she is quite a revelation. Quite a talented, very talented. So I'm going to give this an 11 out of 10, to be honest with you. It's that good. And hurry up, Prime, and get us the next season on, because
that
I really...
On Prime, is it?
This one's Prime. Right. I really want to see it.
Right. What else have you been watching, Sam?
Well, anybody else got any comments about series they've been watching before I go on a bit more?
I would wax lyrical over the 5 episodes of Titans I've watched.
Oh, interesting. Right. Oh,
absolutely brilliant.
Have you
They're
seen
bringing
those,
in
George?
Other DC characters. The Teen Titans used to be, you know, the sidekicks in the 60s. Robin the Boy Wonder, Wonder Girl, Speedy, Aqualad and Kid Flash.
Aqualad?
Guess who's
Sorry, Robin, sorry. You can't take him seriously, can you?
But the series, it starts off teen angsty. It's a much older Robin. He works for the Chicago police, and he's starting to meet other people who have powers. They're on the run. I'm not going to give too much away. One of the highlights for me was episode 4, where they actually meet the Doom Patrol, which is basically the DC Comics version of X-Men, even though it came out a couple of months earlier, back in 1963, the comic. And everything's so beautifully realized. I kept thinking to myself, I know the guy who leads the Doom Patrol, called the Chief. I know those eyes somewhere. Turns out, under a wig and beard, it was Timothy Dalton.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. Good Lord. They're making a Doom Patrol series, aren't they?
They are, with Brendan Fraser as Robot Man, who's a crashed racing driver whose brain has been put into a robot.
No, we're laughing. Stop it, David. You're making me corpse.
Yeah, the thing is,
I can see why DC never really took off with characters like Aqualad and Robot Man.
You are kind of missing the point here. You're kind of missing the point, because the Doom Patrol were weird and absurdly so. They were the only team in 1968 that DC actually killed them off in the comics,
and they
stayed dead until the 80s when Grant Morrison revived them. But the humour is there. They are self-deprecating, because one of the characters says in the episode, "We're not weird. We're normality challenged."
Wow. Well, I like that.
Oh, dear. But what would Deadpool say?
Yeah.
He'd say, "I am weird," I think. I think he'd quite own it.
I don't think that we can actually say what Deadpool would say on the air.
Probably not. No, that was the tame version. Oh, fantastic. Oh, thank you, Robin. So we're going to have a little bit
of... I've been quite enjoying...
Sorry, David.
I've been quite enjoying a new series called You, which is a thriller series. We've watched, what, 2 episodes? 3 so far?
Yep.
Not supernatural, or at least not...
Not that we know of yet.
But absolutely fascinating. I mean, effectively, it's about a guy who seems a very nice guy, who... how does he bump into it?
She comes into his bookstore.
He works in a bookstore. Yeah.
Which we like that.
And this girl comes in looking for a book, and he kind of hits it off with her, and he likes her. But then, basically, the series is him stalking her. So he kind of follows her home. He finds out all about her. He engineers various meetings and things. He steals her phone. He goes through her phone. Then he kidnaps her boyfriend and tortures him. And he then kind of starts to decide what's good for her and what's not for good for her. And all the while, she's sort of slowly falling in love with him, because he's ever so nice, and he's really nice and sweet, and he's a lovely guy.
There's a lot of third-person voiceover stuff from his point of view, and
it's kind of from his point of view. One of the interesting things that Sam said is that you kind of get into it, and you kind of almost start to not think that what he's doing is weird.
It's a bit Dexter-ish in that way.
It's a bit weird, but it's fascinating. We don't know where it's going.
Well, David said, I think it was the second episode, you actually said, oh, he's like her vigilante, because yeah. these people that he's getting rid of, like the boyfriend, he really was not good
horrible.
For her.
He was a drug dealer, drug taker, awful. Horrible
Absolutely
guy.
Absolutely awful.
Lying, people lying to her, all sorts of stuff. And he's like vigilanteing her without him, yeah. her knowing. So it's a fascinating setup, and I'm intrigued, very intrigued to see where it's going to go. It's one of those things, though, that I really think as well, I'm not sure how it could run past a season.
I think it might just be a one-season thing anyway. It's based on a book.
I don't know how you could sort of spin it out unless you started to just do the same thing, or some girl starts to do the same thing to him for the second season.
It starts to lose its...
It starts to lose its piquancy.
It's definitely worth a watch.
Yes.
It's definitely worth a watch. It's psychologically very interesting.
Y-O-U.
Series.
You.
Yeah. It's Absolutely.
No one knows about the things that I've been through with you. There were times I'd drive you nearly mental. But when you're mad, you're still beautiful. And I know that I'm punching way above. So lucky that we fell in love. Sometimes I wonder, am I enough? 'Cause you could have someone without a belly or a temper. Perfect teeth, hair growing where it's meant. You know my lips are all I can hold against you. This is all that I'll ever need, you and I. Hello, my love, I've been searching for all the good things you do. When people take advantage of you, your heart is pure and so beautiful. And I know that it's just the way you are. Father's eyes but mother's daughter. And you tell me that you don't give enough. Now I found someone with all the boxes that I wanted. Your love is all I ever wanted. Set my heart on fire, I needed something. This is all I wanted to be, you and I. Without a belly or a temper, perfect teeth, hair growing where it's meant to. You know my lips are all I can hold against you. This is all that I'll ever need, you and I, you and I.
And that was Hello My Love by Westlife, new song by the guys, newly reformed. We're going to go, because Westlife. We are running out of time, straight over to David.
Oh,
David, what's your film of the month, please?
My film of the month is a very old film. It's a film called Bell, Book and Candle. And I'm trying to see... Oh, 1958. There you go. So it's a very old film starring Kim Novak and James Stewart. I'd never heard of it, and Sam was kind of raving about it last year, so I bought it for her for Christmas on DVD. Other formats are available. And it's really good. We watched it, and I really, really enjoyed it, despite myself. Kim Novak plays a character called Gillian, and she's a witch, and she has a cat feline familiar called Piwacket, and I love that name.
Piwacket.
I love Piwacket.
I love that name for the cat.
I love Piwacket.
And she lives in, well, she doesn't live, I suppose she does live, actually. She lives in kind of like an Africana shop, above which James Stewart lives. And then these two, kind of, she sort of fancies him, and he kind of quite likes her, but he's in a relationship with somebody else, so she uses her magic to make the somebody else kind of go away, and you have that, like a summoning ritual, and they summon a demon thing in a New York apartment, yeah. And her brother, is it, can make lights go off.
Yeah, Jack Lemmon, played by Jack Lemmon.
Jack Lemmon can make lights go off and on in the street, and can make spells, and it's absolutely a charming, fascinating, really well-made, well-acted little film. I thought it was great. I enjoyed it. But more interestingly than that is that I was fascinated to see Elsa Lanchester in it.
Yes.
Who, of course, played Robin.
The Bride of Frankenstein.
Oh. And same film.
Mary Shelley.
Oh, yes, of course. Mary Shelley.
And she plays Aunt Queenie Holroyd in the film, and she's great, and it's like she's playing it with her tongue firmly stuck in her cheek. She's a bit like Samantha's mum,
Eldora
in Bewitched. But she's great. Elsa Lanchester is in it, and Hermione Gingold is in it, and it's great. It's a thoroughly enjoyable film. So
has it got the same sort of tone as Bewitched? Is it that sort of?
It's a bit darker, perhaps.
It is darker, definitely.
It's kind of not. It's like everything like this. It's kind of a comedy, but not a comedy.
Right.
You know.
Yes, because in a way, this film, she's just toying with his affections. She's not capable of love.
She's very cold.
She's a witch.
She's very cool.
And she is very. Her performance is very like that. Then obviously things change about her feelings change.
Yes.
The witches aren't able to have emotions. Mm.
And when we were watching it, we were saying, well, why hasn't this been remade? I mean, they're remaking everything else. This is a great script, a great film. You know, you could imagine all sorts of people in these roles.
I think they've tried to do it because there's a series called The Good Witch. And this is what reminded me about this film. Mm. I saw it, and the witch has a shop, which is very similar to what Gillian's character has, Kim Novak's character, Gillian. And she has... She's sort of like a herb. She helps people. This witch. She sells herbs and things like that. However, her shop is actually called Bell Book and Candle.
Bell Book and Candle.
So
shop.
It's obviously an homage to this. Mm. And I think this is probably somebody who's written this was a fan of this.
But if you don't know the film, a 1958 film. Yes, it can be fresh. And
it is in colour as well.
It's in colour. The colour's glorious. Actually, there's some really beautiful shots of Kim Novak with a cat in it, which I love that. In fact, the only downside for me is that James Stewart's character is called Shepherd Henderson. So they call him Shep all the way through, and that's a dog. I'm sorry. I keep expecting
it
her
sort
to
of ki- it
get
sort of
down,
Shep.
It's such a great film. I'd probably give that 8 out of 10 or something. I really enjoyed it.
Fantastic. I agree with you on that as well. And that's all we've got time for. Thanks so much, George Mann.
Thank you.
Patricia H. Ash. Robin Pierce.
Thank you.
David J. Howe.
Thank you.
And of course, our producer, Alex Lefchuk.
Until... Where's Aqualad?
Where's Aqualad?
Bring back Aqualad.
Until next time, that's the Stone Tapes.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
angel of music.